Welcome to episode 50 of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host, Cal Nelsinger, joined as always by Rick Cram and Jake Crumpler. It's kind of fitting that after the trade deadline, we get to episode 50. Not going to lie, if I told you that I wasn't sure we would make it this far, but I'm glad Nick somehow sees some value in hearing us talk about relievers. So, guys, we made it through a trade deadline. Jake, there were some talks about switching you over to On the Wire, but, we just couldn't find the right compensation for you. So you're lucky. You're stuck around. So the gang's back together. How did you guys enjoy your deadline?
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. I think we saw the big moves before yesterday, before Tuesday, yesterday, Tuesday, the deadline itself was a bit weird. I think, you and me, especially Cal, and we Red Sox Yankees fans didn't really get too excited about anything, but it's always an interesting day and fun to see any sort of moves happening.
Let me join in on your deadline misery. The Giants, yeah. I feel like, had the worst deadline. They literally did nothing. AJ Pollock doesn't really do it for me. But yeah, I can't believe we made it to number 50. I forgot we didn't even mention it while we were warming up for the podcast. But yeah, I haven't been here for all 50, but it's been a good time for the second half of those 50, and I hope we can do 50 or 150 more.
Yeah.
It's been set the bar so low. We'll do another 10 or so, then we can start talking about the next 50.
Okay, That's fair.
You've been a good addition to the show. It's definitely
six
nice.
Six seasons in a movie.
Ooh, I like that idea. I'm trying to think what actor I'd want to play me, but that's probably a conversation for an off-season show, because we have a lot of moves to get to, like Jake and what we alluded to at the beginning of the show. It was trade deadline season, and while my Yankees only added one reliever and the Red Sox only added Luis Urias and the Giants only added AJ Pollock, your fantasy teams are going to be impacted by these moves. So we want to talk about a lot of that. We tried to preview it, and of course, literally the minute we hit save and submit to get put up there, David Robertson gets traded. So we'll get all into that and a lot more in just a few minutes, but we'll start with some of the injuries. A couple impact injuries happened as well, including the big one. Jordan Romano was placed on the 15-day IL for the Toronto Blue Jays with lower back inflammation, which led to a subsequent move at the deadline. So before we get into the impact of that move, what's our current read out in Toronto? Because that reliever's only pitched in the eighth inning as we're recording this. So do you guys have a favorite for saves in Toronto at the moment before we get deeper into that move?
Yeah, well, I guess we can, we might as well talk about it, let the cat out of the bag, that, Blue Jays added Jordan Hicks. I think everyone thought he was going to be the fill-in closer until Romano returns, but, as we're talking right now, Eric Swanson's pitching the ninth inning after Hicks threw the eighth inning, so that might be a little bit of a, it might be a more of a committee than we thought, or maybe it's just Swanson's the favorite with Hicks getting the eighth. Right now, I think it makes sense to roster both Swanson and Hicks until we figure this out. I don't know. I don't expect Romano to be out that long, but back injuries can always linger. That's a tricky one, especially it seems like he's been dealing with it for a while. So I'd expect him to be back in August at some point, but it's still worth a shot if you're in a deeper league to take a chance on Swanson or Hicks.
It says he's already picked up a ball and he's playing catch on flat ground as early as today. So he could be back when first eligible August 13th. It'll probably be closer to August 20th, but I don't think it's going to be an extended absence, just a little longer than 2 weeks. So that really shouldn't hurt too much. And there won't be too many vulture save opportunities. I know there's guys that are worth it to pick up. I think Hicks should be owned in the majority of leagues, especially holds leagues. But the fact that the Blue Jays haven't been able to stick to one guy, I think sort of makes that situation much less appealing, right? Because you don't just get to like go out and get Hicks and then he gets all the saves while Romano's gone and then it's the top setup guy. It's like, all right, we don't know if it's going to be Hicks, Swanson, Garcia, or Meza any given night. So you're sort of getting screwed. So basically there, you just want to go for the ratios or the strikeouts. Whichever guy you would be picking up anyway to like vulture a save on any other given day, that's probably the best way to go, because it's sort of a crapshoot right now.
And as you say that, Eric Swanson just nailed down the save for Blue Jays after picking off, I couldn't tell who it was, I'm watching that game on my iPad, at first base. So there we go. We got some answer there. But like you said, it's going to be a committee. I expect Romano to be back pretty quickly after the 15 days are up, and he'll jump right back in the stay there as well. But Hicks will be good for the ratios. He's still someone you want to roster. Unfortunate news out of Chicago for the White Sox. We had talked about last week, Ronaldo Lopez got traded. We expected a lot of trades, and the White Sox moved a lot of guys in their pen. But the one person who was left standing was Liam Hendricks, who we know was on the IL. So everyone's thinking, great, Hendricks will come back and he'll be the closer. Unfortunately, that's not the case. He is going to undergo Tommy John surgery and will be out until 2025. Just some extremely unfortunate news. We can talk about wherever this leaves the White Sox. I know Gregory Santos has got a lot of hype right now in the fantasy industry. So are you guys buying into that hype? What's your first read on White Sox and anything further you want to add about Hendricks himself?
Yeah, really, that news is terrible to hear. It's, he'll be a free agent to be too. So it's really tough, especially at his age, coming back from that after dealing with, the cancer diagnosis and everything from last year. It looks like, yeah, Gregory Santos is the only kind of option left in that White Sox bullpen outside of Aaron Bummer maybe getting an occasional save here and there. But Santos is definitely the favorite, definitely the best, the option to roster at this point. I mean, it's really, remember we talked about how good this White Sox bullpen was at one point this year. It's really, really bleak right now after
so bad
after Santos and kind of Bummer. So
Brian Shaw is their next best option outside of those guys.
It's gross.
He's like 100. He's 35. He's got an ERA over 7 and they're like, yep, that's our second best right-hander. That's pretty crazy. And then the rest of the guys are, I don't know, guys you never heard of. Tanner Banks and Jimmy Lambert are about the only guys, and I wouldn't call them household names at all. But yeah, I'm really excited for Gregory Santos. I've sort of been talking him up for the past few months. His pitcher list page is bright red, which is really cool. Outside of the strikeouts, he's pretty much elite everywhere, and except for limiting hard contact, but I think that's something that you can work around. So I'm really excited for him to take over that role. Like we both just said, there's not too many guys there. So I don't think the other options are really going to be taking anything away from him. The one thing is the White Sox haven't been great this year and they likely just got worse. So I don't see them winning too many games in the second half. So that likely means not too many save opportunities for Santos, but I think that's fine. I think he's going to give you great ratios, a decent amount of strikeouts. Maybe he increases those in the role, but that should be fine. But yeah, the news about Hendricks is super unfortunate. I mentioned before the show that this has got to be one of the just worst years in general of life to have for anybody, just to go through a cancer diagnosis and come out the other side better than ever, and then go down with basically the toughest injury you have to face as a pitcher in baseball. That's just, to have that happen in the same year is super rough. So I hope for the quickest, best recovery for Hendricks. We likely won't see him pitch next year, so that's unfortunate. But I don't think his career is just done just yet.
Hopefully in a few years when we're still doing this show and breaking down relievers, we're doing an off-season show where we're talking about Hendricks recovering from TJ and getting another shot somewhere and still competing for saves, because he's one of the good guys in baseball, fan favorite. So I don't expect things to be done for him, but it's gonna be a tough road back. But if anyone can beat it, Liam Hendricks has shown that throughout his career. The final two injuries from this: Austin Adams placed on 60-day IL with a fractured right ankle. Tim Hill placed on 15-day IL, sprained left ring finger. We don't have to go too in depth on those. We got a lot more exciting news to get into. So, monitor those situations close enough. But on to the trades. There is a lot to go on. And we'll start off with, I guess, what we deemed the most impactful moves. There's two ones where we think might be a clear closer switch. And it starts out in Arizona as they acquire Paul Sewald from the Arizona Diamondbacks in a package that included Dominic Canzone and Josh Rojas. Obviously, if there's two sides to this coin, so we'll start out with Arizona, who's been we knew he was going to make a move, and Rick had a big smile on his face in the group chat once this move was made. So, Rick, does Seawald step right back in, right in as the closer here in Arizona?
Yeah, he should. And it's a great move for Arizona. I think, you know, there was some talk about how, like, the prospects they gave up, but I you know, they gave up a left-handed outfielder. They have plenty of them. I think it's a good, you know, I was hoping Arizona would also add a starter, but it's nice that they got the back end shored up a little bit here.
They called Seawald up a prospect.
Yeah, Slee. We'll see how he pitches tonight.
Slade, that's such a sick name, though.
He's been struggling at AAA, but yeah, it is a cool name.
But that name is sick.
But yeah, I think Seawald's definitely, I don't think much changes if you are rostering him at this point. I don't think a lot changes. I think it's a pretty much lateral move for fantasy aspect. But it's great to see the Diamondbacks go out and be kind of aggressive here.
You could sort of say he's got less competition. I mean, Andres Munoz, I think, is better than the rest of the Diamondbacks bullpen, and the Diamondbacks, like we'll talk about later, also dealt Andrew Chafin. So that's one less guy for Seawald to deal with. So now it's basically just Seawald and McGuff at the back end of that bullpen. And the way McGuff's been pitching recently, I don't think they're going to be too scared about him. So yeah, I think Seawald might even be more secure in Arizona. The Diamondbacks have been better than the Mariners this year. So more wins there, and they bought at the deadline. So maybe more wins in the future as well. I was interested to see how you guys felt about this trade from the Diamondback side in terms of who they gave up. I know that's not really reliever-centric, but
right.
I wasn't really, like, I didn't think the trade was too crazy. At first glance, I was like, the Mariners got absolutely robbed. Yeah. And I think I mostly had that idea because the big prospects that they got, Canzone and Bliss, were both, like, I would say underrated. In mm-hmm. terms of prospect rankings, like, they were pretty low on MLB Pipeline, but they've been crazy in the minor leagues this year.
Yeah.
So I think, because I initially was like, oh, wow, the Diamondbacks got a steal here. And then one of my fantasy league mates was just like, are we dumb? Because everybody on Twitter is saying, like, the Mariners got a steal here. So I don't know. I think Seawald's been one of the best closers in baseball for like three straight years, and those are some prospects that they seem more like quad A guys. I don't know about Bliss yet, he just reached triple A, but Canzone seems more quad A without like a natural position, and he's already 25 at triple A, but he's raking. So I don't know, what do you guys think here?
Bliss is also, like, I think he's only like 5'5", he's a small guy. Oh, he's right, so It takes a lay out. Like, Altuve is really the only, I mean, guy. Yeah, but
Tony Kemp.
Yeah, Tony Kemp. Sure. I mean, if he's Tony Kemp, that's probably the best comp, like, an accurate comp, maybe, actually. I think it's more to do with, you know, people saying the Mariners won the deal. I think it's just underrating. I mean, maybe I'm biased here, but underrating Paul Seawald. I think it's not really a household name. I don't, you know, it's not Craig Kimbrel. It's not, you know, one of these big time closer names. But I consider Seawald one of the best closers, you know, top 5, 10 in baseball. So,
yeah.
And they get him for an extra year too. It's not just this year, it's also next year. So I think it's a great move. Like you said, yeah, it's like probably some quad A guys. And I mean, Josh Rojas has been really, really bad this year. They've kind of moved on from him anyway. So, yeah, I think it's a good deal for the Diamondbacks.
I would agree. The best moves are those ones where you have both sides, where it's not clear. Like, if they're out there in 20, you said you've seen some people talk about that, where it's the Diamondbacks got robbed. Or, oh, nope, now the Mariners get robbed. So I think it's a fair deal. We'll see what Rojas do. Just a few years ago, he was mid to upper half or so picking fantasy because he's got the speed, he's got positional flexibility. Bliss, we'll see what he can turn into as a prospect, but a lot to like there. And Canzone was a key part for Diamondbacks early on, and the Mariners are pretty right-handed heavy in their lineup, so adding some lefties can't hurt them. So overall, I think it works out for all sides. And Diamondbacks, we talked about all season how much of a bullpen need they've had, and Paul Seawald was one of, if not the best relievers that were truly available at this deadline. While we wanted Jordan Hicks there, and that probably maybe could have been better off, but Seawald, as Rick said, is pretty dang underrated. So I think it works out pretty nicely for both sides. Yeah, and as and we then, talk,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Nope. Go ahead.
No, I was going to transition to the Mariners.
You know what? That's exactly what I was going to do. So take it away.
Yeah, that's what I said. Go ahead. Okay, sure. I'll take it.
My Mariners.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, then this leaves for the Mariners, Andrés Muñoz, pretty clearly as the top guy there in Seattle. And I was mostly just interested to see where... Rick, have you done rankings since the deadline?
Mm-hmm.
And then do you put Muñoz on there? Sorry, I haven't looked at him.
I did. I have him 11th.
Some co-host.
11th? Wow, I know, right? Fake fan.
What do you want me to put? It's tough.
No, I'm not arguing with it. I'm just saying I didn't think about it at all. I was always wondering where he was. That's crazy.
It's tough. I mean, there's a lot of it's that top 15 still to me is the same, and I think essentially he moves in to a spot where, you know, I've heard a lot of Matt Brash like potentially getting some save opportunities and maybe them having a committee, but I believe today they kind of squashed that and said that Muñoz was going to be their primary closer moving forward, and he got a save today as well. So the only thing to worry about really with him is like health, because he's been on the IL a lot in his career.
Yeah.
So it's similar to where they don't Pete Fairbanks, where it's like as long as he's, you know, healthy and the closer, like he's a must roster, you know, relief option.
Yeah. I think so. He's definitely really elite, at least in the velo and the strikeout rate department. And he does get a lot of ground balls too. So I think stuff wise, yeah, he's really good. I don't know how good the Mariners are going to be in the second half, but I don't think it really matters if as long as their games are close and they win a decent amount of games. But yeah, that's crazy. Right behind Emmanuel Class A, in between Class A and Bednar, that's a pretty solid spot to be, but it'll be interesting to see if he can have those same skills as a closer, because this is a guy that could be a number one closer at some point, but I think that'll take a better team and maybe a more secure role.
And in the first look at this since the trade was made, one of the first looks to, as we're recording this today on Wednesday, Matt Brash pitched in the seventh in a tie game between trailing the Red Sox by one in the seventh. Matt Brash held the lead. The Mariners ended up scoring four runs to take the lead, and Andrés Muñoz came in the ninth. Cool. So, if you look at it that way, Muñoz seems to have the lead. And he was the guy with Brash was obviously rosterable for holds, but Muñoz should be the clear go-to guy for saves going forward from Seattle. The next move happened maybe an hour after we recorded last week's episode, where we talked about the Marlins getting a right-handed reliever and David Robertson going somewhere. Well, that's a match we should have seen coming. David Robertson gets traded to the Miami Marlins for two young prospects. And now we get that committee where we think David Robertson is a favorite for saves, but we talked about how AJ Puck isn't fully going away and how good Tanner Scott's been. So what's your read currently out of Miami? Is David Robertson the current favorite right now? Are the lefties still rosterable?
I'm laughing because, we'll start with after the trade was made. I believe it was Craig Mesh, who's one of the best beat reporters around, said that David Robertson would get 90% of the Marlins saves. And he has been pretty bad since then. And as we're talking, literally 3 minutes ago, he just let up a two-run home run in the 10th inning. So he's let up a couple of home runs since he's moved over there, and probably could potentially get another loss tonight. So not a great start for him there. I still think, you know, they traded for him. They're going to give him a chance to be the closer there. I know Tanner Scott's kind of struggled recently too. He's been also dealing with some sort of injury. AJ Puck, I mean, there's just not a ton to, you know, say about him. He's struggled all of July, so it's, you know, I still think Robertson's the guy to roster here. This whole game has been weird. Craig Kimbrell's warming up in the 10th. Why didn't he pitch the 9th? They went to Soto for a save in the 9th inning. And now, and he blew.
They were trying to rest him.
He blew the save, and now they're going to count. Yeah, maybe.
He rested. Yes, he didn't pitch yesterday.
I know. So I don't know why they didn't pitch Kimbrel in the ninth. But anyway, I think Robertson, back to the Marlins. Robertson's still who you want to roster, but if you still have like Puck or Scott on your roster and you haven't dropped them yet, maybe wait through the weekend and see what happens here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, talking about a steal, it's hard to sort of judge 19 and 18 year old batters, but both of these guys that the Mets got in return seem to be like risers. Like, I think Marco Vargas is probably going to be like a top 50 prospect within the next 2 years. And that's pretty crazy for 2 months of a 40 year old reliever, and especially with the way that he's pitched in his first two games. But maybe if he can turn it around and the Marlins can have an extended postseason run, it won't really matter in the long run. But that one's definitely going to be interesting to watch. That has the feeling of a James Shields for Fernando Tatis Jr. type trade, where it's just some unknown prospect that a team gets for a veteran pitcher. And then years later, you're like, oh my gosh, why did they do that? But I think this bullpen at full strength looks really good. Like,
it does.
If everybody is pitching to their full abilities, like if Puck can figure things out, Tanner Scott can get healthy, and David Robertson can sort of relax a little bit, that top three is very solid. And then to have the rest of the bullpen with Jorge Lopez with his upside, Steven Okert's been great all year long, Chargois, Andrew Nardi's back, Huascar Brazoban has been very solid all year, and George Soriano is quietly having a sub-2 ERA. That's like nine guys that'll take you through any ball game, and that's probably a great feeling to have, especially when you got such a good rotation and you added to that offense. I think the Marlins did pretty well at the deadline, and that pitching staff is going to be scary to face if they can hold on and make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, you got to like what you're seeing out in Miami. You move over to the Mets side of things. There's a lot of talk about who's going to come in. We thought maybe it would be Aureli or Ottavino split, but then everyone said hold up because they're likely to be dealt. Well, neither of them were dealt. So if we have to pick a leader for the Mets going forward, is it Brooks Aureli? Is it David Robertson? Drew Smith could fit in the picture. What's our read for the Mets?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe they didn't trade Rayleigh. I'm surprised. I thought he would have been the top left-handed reliever available. But it's probably going to be a split between Rayleigh and Ottavino, and both of them blew saves yesterday. I think Rayleigh ended up with the loss, but it's still going to be those two guys. And then, Drew Smith, maybe towards the end of the year, they start factoring him in. But yeah, like, this is another bullpen that just after the deadline you know, you look after those three guys, it's kind of gross, the rest of that bullpen.
Luckily they got Trevor Gott earlier. It wouldn't be looking too good. But yeah, it does seem like it's going to be like a platoon situation in the closer role, because you've got a righty, you've got a lefty. Neither of them really stands leagues above the other one in any category. I think Rayleigh's pitched better than Ottavino this year, but Ottavino does have the handedness advantage and the experience advantage. So it does really seem like it's just going to be a platoon, like whoever is available to pitch or based on matchups. We'll see. It could be like an even 50-50 split the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to look at that one, because there's a lot of talk about the impact for closers, and it's the teams that lose closers at where it's the biggest question mark and the biggest opening for us fantasy players. So if you want to jump on that, I think Rayleigh right now seems to be the favorite, but monitor our situation closely, because we've seen what Ottavino can do. But Showalter has said he wants to, the tiebreaker is going to be youth, and let's see what some people have. So maybe he wants to get some different looks, maybe that leads to a Brooks Rayleigh back end of the game. But Kendall Graveman is the next move that happened. He went from the White Sox over to the Houston Astros. Obviously, he's not going to be competing with Ryan Presley for saves, but in your holds leagues, does Kendall Graveman have any sort of interest now as he joins a crowded Astro pen?
He'll definitely... he has like a very deep holds leagues. He's interesting, but I don't imagine he's gonna. Neris has been pitching better. Abreu has been pitching better. So he's, you know, at best he's like your third setup option there for Houston. So, not a priority roster, I don't think, in any league, outside of really, really deep holds leagues or maybe AL only formats, but he was probably already rostered at that point because he was closing games for the White Sox. So, yeah, I think it's pretty safe to drop him unless you're in one of those deeper formats.
Yeah, second time in the last 3 years, Graveman's been traded to the Astros at the deadline, which is pretty interesting. They sort of had a theme here at the deadline, just reacquiring guys that they had a couple of years ago, as they also got Justin Verlander. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to watch sort of where Kendall Graveman lands on the bullpen ladder. Is it going to be as the third guy outside of Neris and Abreu, or is it going to be like behind Maton and Stanek as one of the depth guys beside like Rafael Montero? Because Graveman's numbers have been solid on the surface this year, but beneath the surface they aren't as rosy, and he is getting older. He's 32 now. He doesn't have the same stuff he used to, but you do have to trust the Astros a little bit. They acquired him for a reason. They have familiarity with him too, so they could get him back to normal. If we look at his numbers the last time he got dealt at the deadline, it's sort of a different situation. It's somewhat similar because he was super good in Seattle.
He was, yeah.
0.82 ERA. He had 10 saves. They traded him to the Astros. He had a 3.13 ERA the rest of the way, which matched his xFIP in Seattle during that time. So if you follow that thought, he's got a 3.48 ERA in Chicago this year, but it comes with a 4.84 xFIP. So if he's going to do the same exact thing he did that time, it's going to be a rough second half, but I sort of trust the Astros, but I don't think he's going to be pitching to a 3.5 ERA. I think he's going to be closer to 4, but we'll see if they can help him reach back to the old times.
The good news is it's the Astros, and they do a good job with pitchers, exactly. But yeah, like you said, I mean, he's got like 11% K to walk rate and a 41% ground ball rate, which usually he's, you know, he gets a lot of ground balls, so yeah, they got some work to do with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to keep going with these moves, including a name we probably should have talked about earlier in the show as one of our favorite winners from the trade deadline on a last-place team, but all that and more on In the Pen.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
All right, we alluded to it right before the break, but one of our biggest winners from the deadline is a name we mentioned throughout the season as a guy you should be keeping on your watch list, and it's Carlos Hernandez. That's because Scott Barlow has officially been dealt. He goes to the San Diego Padres to help get the ball to Josh Hader. We'll get into the impact for him in just a moment, but let's talk about Carlos Hernandez first. If you were going to put him up with in terms of you know, the Andrés Muñoz or the Brooks Raley, where do you keep him in those sort of rankings of guys you want to prioritize in ads?
I'll take Hernandez over any one of those committee guys, I think. It's tough because the Royals are the Royals. They might not give you a ton of save opportunities, but Hernandez is the only kind of option that the Royals have to close out games. So he shouldn't be at least in a committee. And he's also been pitching, you know, really well all season. So at least if I'm not getting a ton of saves, I'm getting, you know, I'm not getting wrecked in the ratio department, and he should help out with some strikeouts as well. So I'll take, you know, I put Hernandez right now at 21, but he could definitely climb up that list, you know, as the season progresses here towards the stretch.
Yeah, I've been pumped about Hernandez all year because he added velocity this year. He was a hard thrower out of the rotation, but now that he's in the bullpen, he added a couple ticks and that sort of put him in that elite velocity range. And guys that do that have been on our radar since we did that podcast during the off season last year. Maybe that was that September. I think it was the off season, right?
Yeah.
Where we looked into sort of how Velocity can decipher who's going to be the next like big reliever. And basically you just look at the Velocity leaderboards and those are all the best relievers in baseball. And Carlos Hernandez wasn't on there yet, but when he added Velocity, he climbed up into that upper echelon and now seems to be one of the better relievers in baseball. He was pretty unlucky in the first half and that seems to be turning around in the second half. He's been pretty good. I think since July 18th, he's got a, or June 18th, he's got a sub 2 ERA. And yeah, if he's getting all the saves in Kansas City, well, there might not be that many. I think he's going to be pitching pretty well. He already got a save before Barlow was even gone. So that sort of laid the groundwork for him to take over that closer role. And I think he's going to be really good the rest of the year, even if he doesn't get too many saves. I mean, I mentioned this sort of when we were talking about the A's in the preseason, that when the Royals do win, when the A's do win, they don't win by much. So there's going to be save opportunities when they do win. But yeah, it might not be too many.
And we talked about Scott Barlow. I think it's safe to say he's pretty droppable at this point outside of maybe some holds leagues. What kind of role do you expect him to have out in San Diego?
I'm sure he'll factor into some holds out there. Probably have more holds than he had saves with the Royals, but I don't. You know, Suarez is still better. Wilson's still better. So Barlow kind of fits in between as that, like, secondary potential setup man, and he's just really been struggling lately. So unless unless he gets back to his, you know, April and May form, or you know, the Padres tinker with him somehow, I don't see him really being much of a factor this year. However, I think next year, if Hader does leave in free agency, I wonder if Barlow might be a stopgap closing option for them, at least to start the year. I'd imagine the Padres would want someone, you know, better, but he does have experience and he will be, you know, he's on the contract for one more year. So I don't know.
Yeah. I think Robert Suarez is better, but that's a topic for the off season. I don't know. Josh Hader better be a little scared right now. Barlow could take over that role, but, all seriousness, he's been really unlucky this year, despite walking more batters than he ever has in his entire career, leading to the lowest strikeout to walk rate of his career. His xFIP still isn't that high. It's the second worst of his career, but it's 3.97 compared to a 5.35 ERA. And while I wouldn't say Kansas City's a poor ballpark, and that's sort of why he was struggling, the Padres is also a pretty solid ballpark. Petco Park is pretty good for pitchers too, so I could see him doing a lot better. There's a study that went around, I forget who did it, but I listened to it on Effectively Wild before, that when players get traded from one league to the other in a year that they're struggling, they usually generally have a lot more success in the second half. So that whole idea of changing scenes, changing teams to sort of give yourself a new start, when you're changing from one league to the other, and you struggled in the first half, there's a large correlation of better success, a lot more success in the second half. And a lot of that can be attributed to many other things outside of just changing leagues and stuff. But that does seem to be something that should be bought into, especially given that you have these underlying metrics that support a Barlow bounce back. So I don't know, maybe Barlow's actually going to be really good in San Diego. They really don't have a deep bullpen. I don't really see them making this postseason run that they're super hyped about, but he does give that bullpen a lot more depth, which it's been lacking all year.
Yep. So speaking of bullpen depth, Milwaukee Brewers added some more to their bullpen. Obviously, he's not going to replace Devin Williams, but Andrew Chafin goes from the Arizona Diamondbacks to Milwaukee Brewers. Fantasy-wise, you know, he's, again, it's pretty droppable, but do we see him maybe as a holds option out there?
Yeah, Chafin's he's definitely a holds option still. I think it's just, this is, you know, after the Seawald move, I thought that was a great move for the Diamondbacks, but then they did this, and I was like, what are we doing here? Because
yeah,
he's still a quality, you know, setup option. He's the best left-handed reliever they have. I know they have Nelson. They called All-Star Joe Mantiply back up, but like, you can. I don't see why you had, like, it felt like they needed to move Chafin. It just felt forced, and especially given the return, it's this very underwhelming move. But Yeah, I'm excited for Chafin in Milwaukee. Yeah, that's a good fit for him. That's a good team that, you know, develops relievers and does a really good job with their bullpen. So, and they needed a lefty there badly. I know Milner's been pitching well, but this gives them, they lost Justin Wilson, so this gives them a second lefty.
Oh my gosh.
It's poor guy. I know.
Yeah. That sucks.
Not even pitching, like warming up for your first start back. You
just terrible. Shades of it's, Daniel Hudson.
Yeah, I feel terrible for the guy.
Yeah, I think Chafin definitely gives that bullpen some depth, and it's honestly a quietly solid bullpen because they just have like a bunch of no name guys that people don't really know. Joel Piamps has been one of the best relievers in baseball this year. I don't think anybody really notices that because he doesn't have a name that people know when he's sort of setting up in a small market team.
He was like a throw in that Contreras trade earlier in the offseason. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And he's been incredible this year. Even Elvis Pagrero, low strikeout rate, still been really good. And Milner, like you mentioned. And then they've got young guys like Abner Uribe going there. So Chafin definitely brings something that they don't have, a hard throwing lefty, and that should be interesting to watch. The Diamondbacks trade sort of makes sense in a vacuum in that they have a ton of lefty relievers. Yeah. It's sort of like if the Marlins were to deal, I don't know, Stephen Okert or something, or Tanner Scott for a different right-hander, just to give more balance to that bullpen. The Diamondbacks do have Kyle Nelson. He's been pretty solid the whole year, 2.85 ERA, 31% strikeout rate. Solid, maybe an understatement. He's been really good. And Joe Mantiply, all-star Joe Mantiply, I think that explains itself. So you do have lefties that can back up there. And then maybe adding Sewald sort of gives you that confidence of, oh, like we've got this elite closer. We just need a couple setup guys and a little bit of depth, and we've got the lefties already, so we're fine there. And then they do get Peter Strzelecki in return. And with Chafin being a pending free agent, right? He doesn't have an option.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So thank you. With Chafin likely headed for free agency, you get Strzelecki, who's not a free agent until after 2028. And while he's likely not an elite reliever, that's a lot of difference between the years of control. He is already 28, which is something to factor in there. But yeah, he's going to be under team control for a long time, and he's been solid this year. 4.5 ERA, a strikeout rate of 23.7%, and maybe they saw something with him too that they think they can sort of make him a little better. It's like, I don't know, maybe it's got that Ryan Pressly vibe where, you know, a solid reliever on another team that people don't really keep an eye on, and then he goes somewhere else and becomes elite. But I think this has more so to do with the amount of control that was left. It looks like Chafin
7.25 team option for next year.
Oh, that doesn't seem like something
that's debatable. That's borderline.
Yeah, so there is a way that it makes sense, but if you factor in like, oh, the Diamondbacks are trying to add and do well in the postseason, I don't know. I feel like you might as well hold on to him, but I don't. It'll be interesting to see if they can help Strzelecki reach another level, and how those lefties fare without Chafin being like the top dog.
Has there ever been a guy who's just looks more fit to go play in Milwaukee? Like Andrew Chafin with a mustache and just a perfect long hair. Like it was like when he played in Detroit. Like he just has a look for like the central, like gritty sort of the team like that. So I think that's a great fit. Yeah, another lefty to get the ball to Williams. I think that's a really solid. And Strzelecki can help the Diamondbacks. Like you said, it's not like they just traded away for prospects. They got another good bullpen arm for like said, bullpen that's desperately needs as much arms they can get. So you got to like that from both sides. But the next trade we're going to talk about is one that we've been predicting for about a month. Joe Kelly went to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Stop me if you've heard one of us say that before. You can see it from a mile away. He's been there. It's a great fit. He'll join an already crowded pen, but he'll help get the ball to somebody in the back end there. So we see Joe Kelly as someone you can circle watch list for fantasy, or see kind of more of a depth arm.
Definitely an intriguing now from a holds league standpoint, for sure. I mean, he was having a ton of bad luck in Chicago. And like we have been talking about Kelly to the Dodgers, and it just makes sense. It seems like they're going to probably get the best out of him. That's what the Dodgers do. So yeah, I think he could be a really big holds league asset over the next two months.
Definitely, yeah, because the Dodgers don't have too much depth in that bullpen. It's somewhat crowded in that they have possible names. They've got guys in the minors. They've got injured guys that could be coming back shortly, like Trinan, JP Fireisen, Shelby Miller's on the IL. I think he might be done for the year, actually. And then, you've got Phillips and Bruce Dark Ratterall there. But like you said, Kelly, super unlucky this year. He's actually got the lowest xFIP of his career at 3.10, despite having the one of the highest ERAs of his career. I think it's the third highest outside of 2016 and 2022. So super unlucky. He's got great strikeout to walk ratio numbers, 32% strikeout rate, 10% walk rate. That's definitely workable. And going to LA, where they likely have a better defense than in Chicago, that should help on the luck factor on balls in play. And yeah, I mean, right now Roster Resource has him as the third guy out of the Dodgers bullpen. That's a pretty solid place to be if you're going to get a lot of holds. And yeah, I if you're in a holds league, I think Joe Kelly's a must grab right now, especially if he's being underrated because of his bloated ERA.
And then on to the big winner, the trade deadline. Kenyon Milton, traded from the Chicago White Sox to my New York Yankees. Strength just gets even stronger. I don't fully know where he fits into this Yankee bullpen because Clay Holmes has been great and Kane Lee has been great and they're getting Jonathan Loaisiga back soon and Michael King's been struggling a little bit. So I get the need to add a bullpen. I just wish it, wasn't the highlight of the trade deadline, but that's a topic for a whole different show. But do we see Middleton maybe playing in for holds from New York, or there's just too many arms for him to have any sort of fantasy viability?
I still think, like you said, this is a great move, but it's not. It shouldn't be the top move that the Yankees make. But it's a good move on the surface. Just you can never have too many bullpen arms, and even when they get Loaisiga back, it's still there's still, if you're gonna have some starting pitching issues, especially towards the back end of that rotation, now you at least can shorten the game with the amount of bullpen options they have. So I don't know, he wasn't getting a ton of holds anyway in Chicago, and you probably won't get a ton here, but I still like him. I still think he's an option in holds leagues, and especially in deeper leagues. Probably not like a top 25-30 holds option, but he's still, just based on the strikeout rate, I think he's still a name to monitor.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys there in New York, so it's sort of difficult to see him factoring into that. But like you said, he gets a lot of strikeouts. He's got the highest strikeout rate in that bullpen as of now. It's pretty close with him and Clay Holmes. But there's a lot of options there. I'm sort of more interested in talking about Ron Marinaccio being an option, because he's really solid this year. And so I was interested to see what Callen had to say or how he feels about Marinaccio being an option.
I think it's the right move at the time. It was also, part of it was we needed a starter for the other day with Domingo Herman's circumstances for a spot start. Sure. And he was coming out of long relief. We kind of burnt through the bullpen after Severino couldn't get out of the fourth inning. So Marinaccio just had to eat innings. I think there's something there. Walks have just been an issue for him lately. I do think we'll see Marinaccio down the stretch. He'll probably be if not in August, a September call-up, and he'll still play a role. The Yankees obviously had trust in him because he was a high-leverage guy at the beginning of the season. Just the walks became a little bit too much. He had, I believe, around a 13% walk rate. So he needs to work on that a little bit, but I still think there's a lot to like there. Just like you said, there's a lot of arms in New York, and someone had to go. So I think Marinaccio, just option-wise, they just had to do it.
That's definitely fair. I didn't realize his walk rate was that high, and
he's been struggling lately,
falling off a little. Yeah. But the way that bullpen currently stands, I think that's a very, very solid bullpen. And if the Yankees can make a run, I mean, there's still a lot of season left. There's still a third of the season left. They definitely are not out of playoff contention. And while everybody outside of Yankees fans don't really are sort of happy with the way things go, I think the Yankees fans would have wished to seen more added to this team. But I guess you got Judge back, so the offense is fixed. You've got Garrett Cole, so you're fine. But the bullpen's looking pretty good.
Yes. And the final move in terms of impact, and before we get into some in-depth moves, Sam Moll gets traded from the Oakland A's to the Cincinnati Reds. We talk about the Reds needed to get the ball to Alexis Diaz somehow, and Sam Moll was a name that, Jake, you kind of threw out last episode as a, hey, keep an eye on this. This guy could maybe get dealt. He's got a lot of control. So we'll let you start it off there. Is he someone you need to circle for holds? I mean, the Reds are obviously a good team, and so they're going to finally have someone to get the ball to Diaz. Is he someone that's will get those high leverage spots?
I mentioned him more so as like a guy that could take over for the closer role in Oakland, which I cannot believe that Trevor May didn't get traded. That was like my one guarantee all offseason, was that Trevor May is going to get traded. So whoever else there is going to be the closer afterwards. I guess that that strikeout to walk ratio was really so disgusting that teams weren't willing to give up anything. But yeah, I guess Sam Moll's definitely a lot more interesting, got more control, is 31, been pretty solid this year. Will he be good in Cincinnati is another question. He is their top left-handed option, so that does give him a leg up in terms of getting holds, because they don't have anybody else outside of Alex Young, who's been really great this year. But as of now, I think Moll may be a step above him because he's more of a strikeout arm, and maybe landing in Cincinnati, where I have a little bit of trust with their pitching development, because they do sort of work with driveline and everything. So I think they can pump out some guys there. And the guys that he needs to jump over aren't anybody that I'm like worried about. I think he could jump above Derek Law. I think he can jump above Ian Gabeau. He probably won't land above Lucas Sims, but then you're the third guy, second guy after Alexis Diaz, and you're the top lefty. I think he could factor into holds. And with the way that the Reds have been playing, that's definitely a possibility for this guy to be a holds guy. But I think it's more of a lower level option, because I don't think he's going to be elite in any ratio, strikeout, or holds categories.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I think he might be a factor in the holds, you know, situation behind Sims and, you know, a closer Alexis Diaz, but I don't know if he's anyone. I think we've already named kind of the guys that I would target for him in deep leagues. He's interesting. It's just, you know, going to that ballpark worries me too, and just like you're going to be pitching half your games where right-handed hitters, you know, tend to feast. So it's going to be tricky for him, a guy who's got a career ERA over 4 or something. So yeah, we'll see what happens. It's definitely a move for the Reds. I was hoping the Reds would do more, especially their starting rotation, but they needed a lefty in the bullpen, that's for sure, and that's, you know, a decent one that they got.
We'll take one final break, and we get back, we will breeze through the last couple of moves. Obviously not as fantasy viable, worth noting, seeing if maybe we can find some diamonds in the rough there. But that and some more, we continue on in the pen. All right, there's still plenty of moves to talk about. We don't think they're as viable fantasy, so we'll breeze through them. We'll put them in groups of 4, see if anybody stands out among them. So first group, Brad Hand gets traded to the Atlanta Braves, Jose Cuas to the Chicago Cubs, Manuel Rodriguez, Tampa Bay Rays, and Chris Stratton goes to the completely active Texas Rangers, who might be the biggest overall winners of the entire deadline just for a pure baseball standpoint. So of those 4 names, Hand, Cuas, Rodriguez, and Stratton, anything of note fantasy-wise?
Not for this year, but next year, Manuel Rodriguez will be the Rays closer at some point. So just jot that down, and yeah, that's all I got.
Like that.
Yeah, that should be interesting to watch, because I know he was like sort of a guy with a lot of upside that the Cubs fans were pretty excited about the past couple of years. So that'll be interesting. I mean, anytime the Rays are interested in a reliever, you gotta have some faith in them. But when it's like a guy like that you already have some hype for, then it gets even more interesting. Mm. That's where you can start to see guys turning into relief aces. So yeah, that one definitely is interesting. I was sad to see Stratton go to the Rangers, since I predicted him to the Rays. I actually didn't get either of my Rays predictions right. Jason Shreve, did he even get traded? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, the Tigers didn't move any relievers. Yeah,
goofy.
I know.
I do want to talk about one trade, the Jose Cuas trade, but not even on the reliever side. Why did the Cubs do that? why did they trade Nelson Velasquez? I think he's pretty solid. A little bit fringy, but he is young. He is a guy with a lot of power. He can play decent outfield. And to get like Kuas, who, yeah, he's got a great story. That was one of the things that made him an interesting guy on the Royals last year. But this is a guy with a 4.5 ERA. He's 29 years old. Of course, he's got a lot of control because he just got called up recently. But I mean, he's 29 with a 4.5 ERA and a 4.25 xFIP, and I guess he does strike out a lot of batters, but it's still like 27%. It's nothing bonkers.
They must see something because there isn't really a lot to like get excited about. Yeah, with his profile, he doesn't throw hard. He does get a lot of swings and misses with his slider. I guess they're gonna just probably have him maybe start throwing that thing like 75-80% of the time, and hopefully that works. Yeah.
It's not like they won't have room in the outfield as Cody Bellinger set to be a free agent after this year. And the way he's playing, he's going to cost a nice hefty contract that I don't know the Cubs would want to deal. So Velasquez could fit right in there. So strange trade, to be sure. But, monitor Manuel Rodriguez. We'll see what he can do with Tampa Bay, because anyone who goes to Tampa Bay turns into a stud. Next group, Tucker Davidson gets traded to the Kansas City Royals. Dominic Leone gets traded to Angels, where it may have been more of a note of the prospect the Mets acquired for Dominic Leone. And then two moves for the Mets, Phil Beckford and Adam Kolarik, go to the New York Mets to fill the void of the multiple Mets pitchers that have gotten moved. Anything fantasy-wise of note between Davidson, Leone, Beckford, or Kolarik?
The Leone trade is definitely interesting. Just because they got the Mets got Jeremiah Jackson back for a guy who Leone probably could have. I mean, I can't believe they got a legit prospect for him, let alone someone who's the Angels. I know the Angels system's not great, but it's still a top 10 prospect. Leone's probably more of a waiver type guy. He's a dime a dozen. I know he's had some good swing and miss numbers in the past, but yeah, it's a strange one, and I don't think he plays into much. You know, the Angels bullpen's pretty deep right now. I don't think he ends up being a holes option. Bigford's kind of an interesting name to keep an eye on in the Mets, as we talked about their bullpen kind of, you know, after the top three being very light. I think Bigford could work his way into holds situations, possibly save situations towards the end of the year, depending on how they go there. So those two names are definitely interesting. Davidson to the Royals, I wonder if they stretch him out, or it might be too late for that, but I wonder if they give him a chance to start games again.
Yeah, Bigford's interesting because he's still young. He's like, I think he's 28, but he's in his age 27 season. So still definitely some projectability there. The Davidson trade was really interesting. I mean, the Angels got Dominic Leone, or Leone. I'm not sure how to pronounce that one. I had a principal in high school named Leone, and we would chant his name at lunch and stuff. Leone. He also ran for mayor, so we were big Leone fans. So I don't know how to pronounce this one. I'll go with Leone. That's a trade in and of itself to give up a prospect of that caliber for 2 months of a pretty mediocre arm. I don't know what the Angels are doing, and then to give up Tucker Davidson, who on the service has not been great, 6.54 ERA, but it comes with an xFIP that's two runs lower and is right around the same as Leone. So I don't know. And Tucker Davidson's 27, and they just got him. He's just starting his major league career. This is a guy that's got control through 2027 too. And the Angels are always looking for any time type of pitchers, whether that be depth guys or guys that have a lot of potential, and I think Davidson can sort of fill both of those. But I don't know, they just gave him up for nothing, and that one's sort of weird to me. He probably won't factor into anything, but I don't think the Royals bullpen is super great, and like I said, Davidson not been great this year, but does have those pretty solid underlying metrics, so maybe he does move up and become the top left-handed option in that bullpen, because I don't think Austin Cox or Angel Zerpa are really guys that are stopping him from doing that.
And finally, Sean Reynolds goes to the San Diego Padres. Justin Brühl goes to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Taylor Hearn to the Kansas City Royals after being acquired by the Atlanta Braves just a week before. And Edward Bizzardo to the Seattle Mariners. Strange one to me is Hearn, that he gets that the Braves get him and the Royals decide we're going to trade for him when you maybe could have gotten him when he was available on waivers. But I don't know, the Royals are just a weird team. But outside of that, anything that we should take note of among those four guys?
Not particularly. I'm, as a former Red Sox prospect, I Bizzardo did kind of intrigue me a little bit. I've just seen what he's been up to this year since he left. Yeah, he's been okay numbers at AAA. He does have an interesting kind of pitch mix as a late inning reliever, but I don't. Yeah, the Mariners too. They've been doing a good job, you know, with kind of rehabilitating pitchers, relievers, you know, values. And I wonder if Bizzardo, they could do some magic with him and turn him into a late inning option.
Yeah, definitely. That was one that intrigued me a little bit, but that, like, only because of where he landed. I don't have any familiarity with Bizzardo, and I guess he throws like mid-90s, which I guess every reliever does nowadays, so right. It's not really a big deal. But yeah, big slider guy, so maybe they'll be able to do something with him. But none of the other guys are super interesting. I feel like, I don't know why Sean Reynolds is catching my eye for some reason. I feel like there was something about him earlier this year. He came up with the Marlins. Maybe it was just like one of those interesting story guys, and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I can't recall either, but if someone can think of something, if there's anything of note, let us know. But before we go to name the closer, the last couple non-trade transactions of note, we'll breeze through these, about eight of them, and I'll let you just tell me at the end if anything matters for fantasy or something you wanted to bring up. AJ Minter activated from the 15-day IL for the Atlanta Braves. We know he'll play into Braves back end. Josh Boers activated from 15-day IL after biceps tendonitis. Caleb Teobar activated for the Minnesota Twins. Andrew Nardi also activated for Miami Marlins. Jake mentioned Ron Marinaccio opting to AAA for New York Yankees, as well as Brian Baker for the Orioles. Brent Honeywell, sad story. I was waiting for him to catch on. He gets DFA'd by the San Diego Padres. I hope he finds a home somewhere else, because he has showed some flashes of pretty good stuff this year at times. And Jake Cousins claimed off waivers from the Milwaukee Brewers by the Houston Astros. I'm sure Minter and Spores are the ones that are the most intriguing, but anything from those transactions that catch your eye that are worth some discussion?
Yeah, Minter, Spores, definitely returning, should be targets in the whole leagues, as well as Nardi, although the Robertson addition probably does make it a little bit harder for him to see consistent holds chances. And, you know, deeper league, Jake Cousins, just interesting. You know, I've always had some interest in Cousins. He showed big ability to get swings and misses last year for the Brewers. So, wonder.
He's got cool initials.
he does now, doesn't he? Good first name, too.
That's right.
But, we're interested to see what the Astros can do with him. Maybe they can. It's been a tough year for him. Maybe they can find something to get him going again, because he was one of my, you know, more interesting, you know, sleeper options for holds leagues this year, and then he just didn't, nothing really worked out for him.
I was surprised to see Brian Baker go down. I mean, he's been solid, like one of the solid guys in that bullpen. He's got a sub 4 ERA. The underlying metrics aren't great, but I mean, at this point, he's sort of just got to roll with it. But I don't know, they've done this with other guys this year where they sent him down just to, I don't know, stave off regression or whatever. So we'll see how that works out. I did find out what it was about Sean Reynolds. He was a former first baseman in the minor leagues, and he transitioned to pitching in 2021. Oh, wow. Yeah, so he's only been pitching for a couple of years, and he was pretty solid this year at AA and AAA with the Marlins, and now he lands with the Padres.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, kind of room for him now. I want to keep a close eye on that story and see if he can catch on there. But excited to see Minter and Spores back. I think Nardi can be interesting. Like I said, Brent Honeywell is the one that not stands out for fantasy, but just personal wise, I really want him to catch on somewhere, because he's had a tough start to his career. But it was nice to see him get some run with the Padres before the DFA. But that's going to do it for these transactions. We'll wrap it up with a little bit of fun. End up with another edition of Name That Closer.
All right. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. This closer played from 1999 to 2009. He's a left-handed pitcher. He's a southpaw, so he was drafted by the Reds in the 17th round of the 1998 draft out of the University of Louisiana in Lafayette. He debuted with the Reds in July of 1999 and was traded to the Orioles at the deadline of that season. Then he pitched for Baltimore as a setup man for the next 5 years, with the last of those, 2004, being the season where he finally began honing his craft as one of the better relievers in baseball. That year, he had a career-high 87 innings pitched, career-high 122 strikeouts, a 2.28 ERA, and a 1.14 whip. He became the team's closer in 2005, where he saved 36 ballgames with a 2.43 ERA. And then he signed with the Blue Jays in free agency following that season. That's a pretty good season right before hitting free agency, and he kept it going, but he only closed for them for 1 year in 2006. That year he had a career best 1.37 ERA, a career best 0.86 whip, and a career high 38 saves, so a really incredible season for him there. But the reason he only closed for that one season was because he missed the majority of the following season, 2007, with injury, came back strong with a sub-3 ERA in 2008, and then fell off in 2009, wrapping up his career at the age of 33. His accolades include two All-Star appearances, that 2005 season with the Orioles and the 2006 season with the Blue Jays. He is no black ink. He never led either league in anything. And for his career, this left-handed closer had 11.6 baseball reference war with a 3.37 ERA, a 1.28 whip, and 117 saves. Guys, who is that closer?
I actually think I know this one.
Really?
I think I saw him from an Immaculate Grid answer somewhat recently, and it made me look at him a little bit because I remember the name, but
I feel like I should know this one. I feel like I should know this one, but I don't. My name, yeah.
Let's hear it, Callan.
Is it BJ Ryan?
That is correct. Ding, ding,
ding. He was nasty. Yeah, he was nasty. Oh, man, that's a good one.
I had no idea the 122 strikeouts 1 year.
Yeah, that's huge.
That would play in today's baseball, let alone 2004. Uh-huh. That's good. Yeah, I don't know why I looked in his career. I feel like I saw someone post a grid that has name. I'm like, wow, that's a throwback name. Just made me think about it, but yeah, that three year run
from 2004 to 2006 was really, really good.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, let's say the Josh Hader before Josh Hader. Mm-hmm. Jorge Julio closing out games over him is kind of a travesty, but sure. It's
was that in Baltimore?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't remember. I was like 7.
Yeah, I was 2003, 2006, 2005, something like that. So,
were you born in 97, Callan?
I was born in 97, yep. I'm the...
Me too.
Alright, wow. So I was going to say I might have babied the podcast, but maybe not.
Well, when's your birthday?
March 97.
I'm the baby of the podcast. My birthday's this month.
Well, happy early birthday.
Thank you.
We'll do some little birthday celebration or something.
Birthday edition, couple weeks from now. All right, I'm ready.
All right, we'll try and remember that. But yeah, that was it.
I won't have a hard time remembering.
Well, yeah, I hope you're able to remember your birthday. That would be a tough one. But that's gonna do it for this episode of In the Pen. If you want to discuss some more of those trades for us, as always, you can find the show on Twitter at In the Pen Pod. You can find me at Callan_Elslager. Jake and Rick, you guys can plug your Twitters as always as we get into this final home stretch of the fantasy baseball season.
Yeah, we're in August already. A season's flown by, it feels like it. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham as always, and just, you know, plug it away with the closer and holds rankings at PitcherList.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. I do the weekend editions of the Daily First Pitch podcast for PitcherList. I also have my personal podcast, Free Baseball, and I do playing time analysis for baseballhq.com, which that's been really busy recently with the trade deadline. But if you want to find all of my work, it's over at crumplerbaseball.com.
Yeah, well, like I said, the season really has flown by. It's crazy to think when August, we're going to get to the playoff stretch for major leagues. All three of our teams are in the thick of things. So it's going to be an exciting back half of the season for us. But for fantasy, this is where your seasons live and die. You got to find those sleepers on the wire, those last couple names for saves. You know, we're going to try and do our best to keep you on top of all the latest transactions and changes when it comes to getting that last save that's going to make a difference in your Roto Leagues or last couple points in your head-to-head leagues. So, as always, feel free to hit us, join the Discord, whatever it takes. But appreciate you tuning in. Next week, we'll have finally our first show without some trade talks. So, lots to look forward to as we move forward here on In the Pen.